Present and accounted for?
Yes.
All right, we are ready to begin the April 18th regular board meeting in August, or August.
Or August.
I don't know, summer is beginning or it's ending, Amy, which do you think? August 18th, 2015 board meeting. Welcome to everyone. Hope you've had an enjoyable summer, and we will get going here. So in closed session, the board met in closed session tonight, and we unanimously accepted, well, we'll vote in open session to make it official, to accept the resignation of a permanent certificated employee. A copy of the settlement agreement is on file with the Director of Personnel, and it's a little bit backwards here, but we do need to, in public, have a vote on that closed session item. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
This will be a roll call.
I'm sorry, I need to know a motion and a second.
Oh, okay. So we need...
I'll move approval of the settlement agreement.
I'll second it.
Okay. Okay. And then it's just a group vote. Am I correct, or a roll call? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. All right. Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. So now we have some minutes to approve, beginning with the regular board meeting of June 19th, 2015. Any corrections, changes, revisions?
I'll move to approve.
Okay, we have a motion, second by Catherine. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? No abstentions. Okay, thank you. Next, minutes of the regular board meeting of June 23rd, 2015.
I'll move approval.
I'll second.
Any changes, revisions? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None? All right. And last, our minutes of July 14th, 2015.
I'll move approval.
Right, a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Any changes, revisions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. I do have one item, Madam Chair. Apparently, the first one was the Measure D board meeting, and I actually was not present, so I would need to be recorded as an abstention.
Oh, from
June
19th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that.
All right. Otherwise, we're all okay. All right. With regard to item 5.01, correspondence, I think we all received an email letter last night from a parent regarding a bus schedule.
Bus stops.
Yeah. Anything else to report? Okay. Now we're ready for public comment. And this is for people who would like to address the board on an item that is not on the regular agenda. I believe we have some speakers' requests. We would appreciate it if you could fill out a form. They're on the back table back there, and turn it into Mrs. Holmes, who will then get it to us. You will have 3 minutes to address the board. We have a timer up here, so we'll hold you to it. And Mrs. Roger.
Okay, we have first Chris Oslin, followed by Gary Donath. Donath?
They're not coming with me, apparently. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Oslin. I'm the father of these two beautiful, not quite 5-year-old enough girls. We've gone through as many of the channels as we can up to this point to try to get them into kindergarten. Our only option at the moment for that is to put them into a TK program. We live in Los Osos. I have two older children who both attend Baywood. The only TK program they'd be able to get into at this point is at Del Mar in Morro Bay. Excuse me, I'm not the best public speaker. We don't really want them to go to a TK program. We feel maturity and educationally they're both beyond needing to go to a two-year kindergarten program. We've looked up a lot of the state's kindergarten preparedness checklist to see how far along they need to be even just minimally ready to go into kindergarten, and they're well beyond all of those. From what I remember about my older boys' kindergarten experiences, I personally feel that they're about halfway through the year as of right now, so I don't feel that that 2 weeks that their birthday is past the entrance date should carry enough weight to put them into a two-year program in a different city at a different school from my boys. So we'd have to get both of our kids to one school at the same time as getting two kids to another school in another city. So we'd really like to pursue that as far as we can to get them into a standard kindergarten program and bypass TK. Am I missing anything? I think that's where I'm at.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. And just for your information, we were unable to address you comments made by the public directly because they're not on our agenda. We can only discuss items that are on the agenda. But we listen, we hear you, and we'll...
By September 1st, and it's the law. It's Ed Code. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We've had a little bit of a change here. We're going to ask for Laura Albers to speak before Gary Donath.
We're good? Hi, thank you for hearing us tonight. My name is Laura Albers, and I'm a parent of two teenagers in the school district. I have a daughter in 12th grade at San Luis High and a son who is a 10th grader at San Luis High starting next week. I'm here on behalf of the water polo players and teams to discuss an issue that we have regarding facilities and the impact on our boys' schedule. A quick background, I'm hoping most of you know it, but a quick background. SLO High School Aquatics practices typically in Sinsheimer Pool. Sinsheimer Pool is closing and it impacts our practice schedule. There have been a lot of people, both coaches and administrators, who worked really hard to find the backup plan for us. Right now, we are planning to practice at Sinsheimer for the first 2 weeks of school, and then we'll be out at Cuesta College in the evenings for practices. This will affect girls' water polo in the winter as well. The problem with this comes to the course schedules and classes that our boys are being put into. Because of the change in practice and location times, SLO High School right now, well, recently, is not giving credit for student participation in water polo and has assigned most of the water polo students, at least the 9th graders and 10th graders, to a 5th period PE class. This is unacceptable to the parents and students because, with practice time being moved to the evenings, plus additional travel time out to Cuesta, student time is severely dedicated. Athletes do not need the PE class as they will satisfy this requirement through their participation in sports, thus making PE really a waste of their precious time and school credits. Some of the constraints we are aware of is there is a perceived inability by the SLO High School administration to allow credit to be given to water polo participation due to the change in practice times. There is a reluctance to consider a fifth period study hall, which in our opinion would solve all of these problems. There's a need to have a credentialed teacher for a fifth period class. 26 days of this trimester, the boys will not be in their fifth period class due to early season practices, games, tournaments. Potential for other activities to see any solution to prioritize their academic studies. And one of the biggest issues is that facility issues like this will be ongoing. This doesn't affect just water polo. This is not a water polo issue. This is an issue. Is that 3 minutes or a warning?
No, it's 3 minutes.
It is. So I need to ask you to begin to wrap it up, please.
Okay. So there's a lot of issues. We are requesting two things. One, that our students be given credit for water polo as they are participating in it just as any other sport in any other year. And two, that there is a policy made to address not just this issue but other sports in the future while Measure D funds are being used to improve the school and impact the facilities, that there be a policy in place to address these issues with student athletes so that they can still have that fifth period study time as we work around these facility issues. Thank you very much.
Okay, then Gary Donath.
That's correct.
Donath. Yeah.
Good evening, and thank you, board members, for giving me the opportunity to speak. And I'm kind of the number two of the 1-2 punch from Laura. But we have some updated information that's good information. It comes in the 11th hour. And this whole scenario, unfortunately, came upon us kind of suddenly. We did not get a lot of advance warning. And I was involved in a conference call with Mr. O'Connor about an hour ago with another parent. So we had a meeting last night at the high school, and it was there was a lot of angst and anxiety about the issues that Laura has informed you of. There are really two central issues that the parents care about. One is that the boys get credit for water polo as a class, simply because they're doing it from 6 to 8:30 at night and not doing it during fifth period. They're still doing the work. And they're doing the work at that time because the facility is closed, and the athletic director and the principal worked arduously to try to secure pool space, and it was not an easy task, as you can imagine. So that's one thing that we need to ask for. The second thing we need to ask for is to give the boys an opportunity to study, because the library is open until 5:15, but then there's this, you know, then they go and take buses to Cuesta to practice. But during fifth period, they should not have to take phys ed. So Mr. O'Connor heard us all last night, and Mr. O'Connor told me and Dr. Eric Olson today that these are the options. The seniors, this really doesn't affect because they have optional fifth period anyway. The juniors can enroll in what's called TA positions, and during the TA position, it will not simply be busy work, grading papers, stapling, you know, bundled items together. They will have an opportunity to learn, to study if possible. The sophomores have the opportunity to enroll in something called study skills for their fifth period, which is basically a study hall, their attitude and opinion based on what happened in the past. The freshmen are the challenge, the freshmen are the problem, but the freshmen are also the future of water polo for Slo High. We have incredibly good coaches now. We've worked years to get good coaches. We want the coaches to stay. We don't want them to leave. They've developed summer programs for our youth. There are now more kids interested in water polo coming in the freshman class. We now have a novice team instead of just a JV team. But we need to find a solution to the freshmen so that they don't take PE during fifth period. They simply don't need PE. They're getting way more exercise than the average American child or young adult by doing water polo. So, to wrap it up, I feel very confident based on my conversation with Mr. O'Connor. Mr. O'Connor implores us all to communicate directly with him and to let him be the person who communicates to all the parents. He's very busy right now. They're trying to work out the curricular changes, and we certainly don't want the game of telephone to take over here with boys water polo where someone says, well, he said and she said. So I really trust that he's going to do what's best for the boys, and I can tell you that all the parents are behind him and the coaches. We just want to see our student athletes thrive and have time to study and get credit for fifth period water polo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Along the same lines, we have Kathy Walker.
Hi. Good evening. Thank you. I really just briefly wanted to cover this issue from an angle that Leslie O'Connor addressed the parents last night. It is a water polo issue, and what these parents have said, I support 100%. One issue, the bottom line, the problem is not a water polo problem necessarily. It's a facility problem. And we're going to continue to face these issues for the next 3 to 4 dug up, and we're going to continue to face this issue. I don't think it's fair to our athletes. One thing that I'd like to propose is that we somehow, and I'm not sure what power you have, but Cal Poly has some excellent facilities, and we accommodate Cal Poly, our school district does, as far as their students coming into the school district and student teachers and that sort of thing. And I believe it seems to be a one-way relationship, and I'd really like to see Cal Poly step up, and I'm not sure you're the people to address, but I'd like to bring this to the forefront, because the Tribune is publishing, or has published tonight, an article about the closure of Sinsheimer and of the pool, and the fact that the varsity, junior varsity, and novice teams don't have a pool to practice in. And so, you know, Cal Poly responded by they haven't acknowledged that the Seahawks club team is sliding into that spot at Cal Poly pool. Or whomever can talk or facilitate some kind of conversation so that Cal Poly can, you know, step up and kind of give us a little when we've been giving to them as a school district. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Jo Devitt.
District for the 2 years prior to that, I taught in Long Beach. And I started here as a substitute teacher, and then from December of 65 through the summer session of 66, I taught first grade at Sinsheimer School. And I stopped teaching to have children. Michael and I have four of them, and our children were educated in this district and graduated from San Luis High. James in 85, Andrea in 86, Gregory in 89, and Carolyn in 90. And although I left the elementary classroom in the summer of 66, I did not leave education. And for 14 years, I gave educational programs on the prevention of birth defects as a volunteer for the March of Dimes to students in all of our substitute teachers, and I found myself wanting to return to substitute teaching. So 34 years ago, last April, I once again began subbing. And frequently, I'm asked which schools are my favorites. And my response is always the same. The schools are like our children. You know, I love them all, and some I really enjoy, but I'll never tell you which ones. Over the years, I have watched you and many, many other school boards make decisions that have affected our students in positive ways. As well you know, some of those decisions have been extremely difficult. And they involve sacrifice. And whenever this happened, I would think of our mother's words, sacrifice is giving up something you value for something you value more. That's what makes it a sacrifice. And I want to thank you for the decisions you've made, especially those that involve sacrifice. Mrs. Holmes, thank you for year after year, month after month, keeping accurate records of school board meetings. And as Dr. Prater's executive assistant, I know that you always have your finger on the pulse of the district, keeping Dr. Prater aware of the condition of San Luis Coastal. Mr. Pinkerton and Mr. Robinette, thank you for keeping this district balanced financially and academically. I think one of the reasons both of you are so successful in your current positions is because both of you were the director of personnel for San Luis Coastal. I think the most important quality for the director of personnel to have is that of being an excellent problem solver. Both of you have that, and you used it well when you're the director of personnel, and you used it well as assistant superintendents. Could I just close with my tribute to, I had expectations for you, and as you've come to know, my expectations are always high. Not once have you disappointed me. And perhaps you recall me saying to you when you became superintendent, I hope you find us to be who we are and not who we think we are. And you did find us to be who we were, and you have quite successfully made it possible for us to become who we think we are. To best describe what you've done for San Luis Coastal, I'm going to again quote our mother. You have indeed made a pretty girl prettier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mrs. Davitt.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to address the board at this time? All right. We will move on to our superintendent's updates, business and budget.
Kudos to our maintenance and custodial crews. Getting ready for day one, have been working hard, you know, overtime, weekends, everything to make sure that our kids are ready to go on that first day of school. Fiscal department has, Julie is and her team have put together our unaudited actuals, so that'll be coming up at our mid-September board meeting. And we'll be kind of refreshing, because as we know, those are kind of set numbers now. We'll refresh that 7-year budget and bring that to the board as well in terms of looking long-term. We're going to talk about staff, and so far it seems like it's been much better than the past of having to go down to transportation, pay fees, do all those types of things. So it's been good. So a few snags here and there, but really working on improving that. You'll also see later tonight a lot of POs. So this is that. Thank you.
Anyone from the public wishing to address Mr. Pinkerton at this time? Okay. Mr. Quisenberry.
Mr. Pinkerton, I was reading the Tribune this morning about Prop 39 funds. And could you just give us a little brief overview of whether we've accessed some of those funds and what we've used them for? They're in energy-related, the ones. Am I speaking about this?
Yes.
Okay.
You are. So State of California, Prop 39, set up. So basically funds that were put in for energy efficiency projects to help school districts throughout the state of California. The goal was to create jobs with that. Now, the problem, unfortunately, sometimes when the state... So whatever project or work you do, you have to prove a certain amount of energy savings to be able to get those funds. So for us in our district, it's taken a little bit longer. I mean, I think it was even midway through the first year of the Prop 39, and it's only been 2 years that it's been going, that the state even came up with requirements and the legislation and law. So basically they made it so hard for districts to access the money that districts weren't able to kind of follow along and spend it. So they've done a better job now with that. It's much more clear for everybody. For our district, and I know that kind of our advisor, our Prop 39 advisor, came and spoke to us not too long ago, I believe in the spring, talked about redoing all of our lighting Prop 39 funds. It's going to basically supplement our Measure D funds as well as our developer fees on some of our projects. And so we'll be able to hopefully get more accomplished with those, but definitely will be using our Prop 39 funds.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Is starting, as you know, on Monday. We a couple really great things. Last week, we had 3 days of a new teacher orientation type of program for elementary teachers, so a 3-day real intensive look at how we do elementary school in our district, because we do a lot. We have high expectations, and it was very, very well received. We had our new teacher orientation, and Mr. Pinkerton was out there barbecuing burgers for everybody today. I think we ended up with 56 new employees. Without it, our classes are and those kinds of things. And we did hire 2 teachers within the last week and a half, which says we're growing a bit in the San Luis area in particular. So we have a new kindergarten teacher at Sensheimer, a new upper grade teacher at Bishop's Peak. We'll be monitoring that extremely closely because we're trying to keep our class sizes at what we've agreed to, and so we have added a couple of teachers there. We did a preliminary look at class assignments, and right now we're at a TK to grade 3, 23-1 average, which is really nice, and 4 through 6 at about 28-1, which is right where we want to be. So overall, it's looking good at this point, and that's just at this point. We have only 7 combination classes in the entire school district, which is a record, and hopefully it stays that way. It's a nice thing when that happens. We're waiting for our testing results from last spring. So the SBAC testing, it has been trickling in. We have some of those results, but they are far, far too preliminary to share with anybody. In fact, they're embargoed from sharing with the public because they are incomplete. So I really have nothing. I thought, you know, mid-August we'd be reporting all of our testing data, but we really can't yet. Right now they're telling us mid-September. So we have on our upcoming board agenda at the September 15th meeting the desire to present that test data, but we will wait and see. So I can't really tell you anything about the SBAC testing yet. It's just too preliminary. We have about 85% of the results or something like that. So until we get that other group, it's just too early to speculate how we did.
Anyone from the public wishing to address this this update? All right, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Rick,
I noticed in the Friday Focus the discussion about the SBAC. I'm not sure whether I understood it correctly. So there's not going to be an API per se.
Yeah, I think there will be.
Like a carryover API? Is that what the...
Yeah, but we will get a proficiency rating.
Okay.
A number of students proficient, non-proficient, and there's several different ways of describing that. Okay. So I'm a little unclear how that's all going to
work. Oh, good. Then I read it right, correctly.
We're also unclear about something. I should mention this. I didn't put it as part of my update, but there's nothing to do for them at this point. And so we're not allowed to issue a diploma because there's no test to give them. There's talk in the legislature that's coming back that the SBAC will take the place of the CASI in some way. We're not sure how that will work. So we are hoping there'll be some sort of provision so that students can truly get a diploma, that have done everything they need to do to get a diploma and have no test to take. So we have some students at Pacific Beach High School as fifth-year seniors that will need that. We have some students who that was their only thing keeping them from that, and we are in limbo. So we're waiting for the state to let us know what to do.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Unger.
Yeah, on that note, Rick, we might want to look at the action that the San Francisco Board of Education took last Friday, where they basically said, we're sorry, but we disagree with the state, and we're going to go ahead and issue diplomas for the students who are in that limbo that you're describing.
And along those same lines, we may be able to do something with adult education diplomas, we think. So we don't want to keep anyone hanging on there too long as the fall progresses, not being able to have a high school diploma that really deserve one. So if that is appropriate, Mr. Unger, we will bring that to the board. Yeah.
Anyone else? All right. Next, we have Mr. Holk, or I'm sorry, a Measure D update by Mr. Pinkerton. Sorry, Ron.
No, it's good. It's good. So we have a board study session Friday, 9 o'clock. We'll basically reviewing two key things. Mr. Holcomb's been working on a new revised draft of an architect agreement for us to move forward on. So he'll be reviewing that agreement with the board, kind of the pertinent points to it, and the main differences maybe between the original contract that went in front of the board. So that'll happen Friday, and then so those kind of proposals that have gone out to the architects right now. So kind of walk you through those particular sites, why those sites were chosen. Our focus is, of course, on Slo High, Morro Bay High School. So why that first phase of construction, which includes a pool at San Luis Obispo High School, just for the audience to know. And so kind of that, why we chose that. So there are specific reasons why the projects that we are set on for the first phase of construction at Slo High and Morro Bay High School, it just makes sense and as we'll move around the campus and hopefully alleviate a lot of the construction concerns as much as we can. There will be issues, of course, but we'll try to do that. So my goal is kind of walk the board through all of those at the next meeting. Okay. We also have a new Measure D website. So I'm going to have Kim pull that up. If anybody goes to the San Luis Obispo Coastal Unified School District webpage, go to community, bond information, and then we have our Measure D website. Stephanie Barteau, her company just finished this for us. And so this is kind of going to be the access point where we're going to hopefully give a lot of the information about the bond and about the projects and what's happening and, excited about getting the kids to get what are they called the model classroom group that has begun. So teachers across the district have been working on kind of standards for the model classroom for the district, just Measure D basic facts, some recent news items that have come up. We of course have our bond oversight committee, which oversees basically every single expenditure, how all of the Measure D dollars are spent. And then some contact information if anybody has any question in the public and wants to talk with me or Mr. Plaza or Mr. Holcomb about Measure D projects. So we're excited about the new website. It looks great. She did a great job. I think it's concise, to the point. And again, we'll just continue to build it from this point forward.
All right. Anyone from the public wishing to speak to the board on this? Okay, Dr. Artis and Beth Rogers.
So it's Courtney who did this work?
No.
This was Stephanie.
Oh, Stephanie. She did a fabulous job. I loved reading this. It's really well laid out. It's really helpful to get to. So really, you can go pretty deep on it, too. You can find out.
There's a lot of information.
Yeah, exactly what's going on. So, yeah, I really appreciate that. It's beautifully done. And we're going to get the physical copies as well for the board? Or you have any? No.
So I met with Stephanie, well, I guess it was last week, and we went through the preliminary. So we're still tweaking this a little bit. We're still making...
Staff will be taking over the website. So making the additions, doing those things. So it's right in line with our current website. So we're able to, Mandy and the team, and we'll be able to add information for the public as we go through projects and add things. So it's great.
Thank you. Mr. Holcomb, anything to add? Anything from your end of the table down there?
Just preparing for Friday.
Okay.
Preparing for Friday. So perfect. We'll have a good report for you then.
Good. We'll look forward to it. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Next, we have item 7.01, a resolution 051516, signature authorization. And Mr. Pink. Gertin, are you addressing that?
We do this resolution at the beginning of each fiscal year, and then...
How do you do? Oh, I'll move approval of resolution 011516.
I know you're a little out of practice, yeah. But, you know, get with the program.
I'll second that.
All right. Motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Quesenberry. It's a roll call vote.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Scheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Passes unanimously.
Thank you. All right. Now we're on to our discussion items, and 8.01 is a summer school review. Mrs. Shields. Ms. McGrath.
Good evening, Mrs. Frost, Mrs. McGrath, and I will be giving you a summary. As you know, Focus 4 of our LCAP plan states that San Luis Coastal will create an intentional culture of care, intervention, and support for all students. If you could pop up the slides for me, Mrs. Holmes, that'd be great. Summer school is an important intervention we provide our LCAP-identified students to increase academic achievement and decrease summer learning loss. This summer, we hosted elementary summer school for 464 students. There we go. At all six of our Title I school sites. Of those 564 children, just over half of them were learning English as a second language, and nearly three-fourths of the students qualified for free or reduced lunch that were part of our program. Based on our current research regarding summer reading loss, we focus time and attention on getting our students actively involved in reading lots and lots of books this summer. Students set individual goals and track their daily reading as either independent, books they read on their own, digital, books they read online, or interactive, books they read to or with were read with them by their teacher. I'm very happy to report that our students read 17,129 books during our 20-day, half-day summer school. In fact, this is a picture of Baywood School summer school students letting you know how proud they are of that accomplishment. I'd like to share two things with you. First of all, a four-minute video so you can kind of get that little virtual field trip into our summer school programs. And secondly, an Adobe Voice presentation that was made by one of our summer school teachers. So we will start with... Can you take me to the next slide? I'm stuck in a digital loop here.
Books is a lot of books. I'm very impressed. I understand. Some of them have more pictures than words, but still, it counts.
It all counts. It's all good. It all goes into the right basket. I'm wondering how you should.
She's talking to him. We didn't ask him. I mean,
they should know that they had to get up and leave, but maybe they think it would be rude.
Content warning.
Amy, can you sign in as Amy? If you sign in.
Ellis Postal Unified School District hosted elementary summer school at all six of our Title I schools for just over 550 kindergarten through sixth graders. All students learning English as a second language were in Buckshot model. Many classrooms included hands-on science, math games, and online reading experiences to increase student engagement and learning. Del Mar and Baywood Elementary included Big Buddies in their program to support younger students' learning in the classrooms. Bonnet Grove and Pacheco included a kindergarten boot camp to help prepare our youngest students get ready for their upcoming big year of kindergarten. Hawthorne students rejuvenated their brains between lessons with indoor hurdle jumping. Students from Smith, as well as other schools, used the Mayan Digital Library to provide personalized student book sets for students to enjoy both at school and at home. Students select books based on their interests and are provided access to thousands of titles. Monarch Grove third and fourth graders participated in a drought-tolerant garden project where they secured donations, purchased plants, prepped soil, and planted a beautiful garden. Students across the district benefited from our commitment to provide engaging learning opportunities that decrease summer learning loss.
Know the next one's going to work. So rather than listening to my voice, let's hear from the third grade students in Mr. Curran's summer school class out at Baywood. One of the things that they did was put together this Adobe voice. I think you'll enjoy it. Less than 2 minutes, I promise.
Summer school because I got to make two types of books on my Chromebook.
I like summer school because we do a lot of typing.
Summer school has helped me with multiplication.
I even learned Egyptian numbers at summer school.
Summer school has helped me with my math.
If I did not go to summer school, I would not learn this much.
Summer school has helped me with my reading.
Summer school helped me improve my reading.
Summer school has helped me read.
A mí me encanta escuela de verano.
If I did not go to summer school, I would not even learn about how to read faster.
If I did not go to summer school, I would not.
Summer school has helped me with learning all about habitats.
Summer school has taught me a lot about creatures, and I even learned that they have abdomen.
I like summer school because it helped to get me prepared for fourth grade. If I hadn't gone to summer school, it would have taken longer for me to get ready for fourth grade, and I would not have been as smart as I am now.
That's adorable. So in secondary, we didn't have any running, hurdling kindergartners going on, but we did have a whole lot of credits earned. So San Luis High School, we did have 141 students for a total of 700 credits. So we did have our math classes also funded by Cuesta College. It's kind of a mutually beneficial agreement. Helps Cuesta out as well as us so that it works out well. And you can see divided out there how many students in each course, as well as the bridge program that we're gathering students in that are designated, that trying to kind of hook that student in and really give them a positive experience and get them excited about going to a new school and maybe a fresh start. So I'm excited about that. Morro Bay High School, we had 1,535 credits, so a lot of students were able to take advantage of that this summer. You can see the classes that were offered there, and again, a kind of mutually beneficial agreement with Cuesta on some of those courses. A lot of students taking government and economics, you can see the help out in their schedule, with some students participating in the same type of bridge program that gets them motivated and, you know, hopefully kind of hooked into being successful in a high school setting. For Pack Beach, they continued what you heard about last year in their sustainable ag, and they added a little more English and writing and reading this year in kind of a cross-curricular theme. So they extended that out to 4 weeks and added this English component. And the great thing is it's two of the Pack Beach teachers. So I think
between the 7th and 8th graders, so Miguel was a real leader in the class, and he's going to just answer one question that we kind of talked about, his experience.
Well, I made a lot of mistakes in the past, and that reflected on my grades, and this class really helped me how to be more organized and how to be a better student. It really helped me a lot, and it helped me how to be more organized, more successful, and be a better student.
Thank you.
Okay, so just to conclude, one of my favorite things about this class is last year at Laguna, I had a fifth period class where I worked with students on intervention that were eighth grade only with three or more D's or F's. And I used my executive function curriculum this summer to do that. And it's awesome because it's not graded. They get to ask me all these questions about, like, why did I do bad? How to teach their grade? She did an experiment with them and just got them all ready for science. Because I was in New York at Lucy Calkins for 1 week. So it was a great team effort. And I just really appreciate you funding this program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fantastic. We do have the 20-day session that mirrors what's going on at our elementary and high schools, and then we offer another 5 days in August for kids who need a little bit more support. Our classes emphasize academic skills, as well as behavioral and social skills acquisition, depending on the needs of each of the students. Our programs were hosted at San Luis High and also at C.L. Smith Elementary School. And then I think you'll be surprised at the support providers who help us host this program every summer. We have speech and language pathologists. We have a school nurse and LVNs. We have program specialists. Our occupational therapists and our adaptive physical educators also help all consult on this program to make sure that our kids benefit from it. Give you a little idea of who's participating in this program, starting with preschool all the way through our 18 to 22 year old program. So you'll see that we are very well represented throughout the grades. And then students by their eligibility area. So by their disability, you'll see that we've listed primary disability as well as their secondary disability. So children with autism, children with intellectual disability. But as you go across, you'll see again, it is a very diverse group of kids who participate in this program. Just a couple of notable highlights. Again, those social and behavioral skills that they need to build. In our Adults with Disabilities program, we maintained connections with the businesses we have in town. Those are the connections that we use in our adults program throughout the year. And our kids logged, or actually, excuse me, our young adults logged more than 50 hours of work experience throughout the summer. For our pre and elementary program, because the schools and programs combine for the ESY experience. So I have students coming from the coast and from San Luis Obispo on the same campus. They really had an opportunity to develop new peer groups throughout the summer, and we can consider that positive. We also hosted many typical peers to volunteer in our classrooms, providing support and connection to our students. And then just last, a little bit about our numbers. We hosted 124 students in our program. We had 72 students receive lunches daily. We transported 93 of those students, and they were really proud to say that 7 of our current special education teachers in San Luis Coastal help us with this program, and then we have 9 teachers from outside our district who guest to help out with this program. We consider it very, very valuable, and thank you for your support with the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think we might have one.
Is that
No, it's not. It's
Come on up. Come on up.
Thank you. This is my other 8th grader, Brianna Arteaga, and she's had the misfortune of having me in 6th grade and in 8th grade.
Hi, my name's Brianna.
Good evening.
Hi. I learned a lot in summer school. It was really fun. I learned I learned that if I brought a binder, I would be more organized over there at summer school. That that if I were to just bring nothing, just a pencil or paper in my backpack and just stuff it in there, I would not find it. I wouldn't find the papers organized or completely, like, it would be all crumbled, and teachers wouldn't like that. Teachers wouldn't like your papers crumbled. They would rather have a paper organized and nicely handwritten and organized, like, really nicely. And in a binder, you'll have it more organized. But if you just have it stuffed in a backpack, they won't take it. They won't like it. You'll get a lower grade. And I learned that there's specific binders that cost a lot that we don't really need. Like the trap binder, we don't really need. It'll just get in the way of papers, getting in and out, and there's so many pockets. You won't know where you put the papers in or where you put your pencil, eraser, or anything in it. And I learned about tabs, too. Tabs, there's, like, other tabs that won't work that are really cheap and that you need. In order to have good grades and have everything organized, complete homework, and you would find everything inside the binder instead of just trying to look through it through your backpack. And what else? That you need to turn in your papers in on time, no matter what it is. Yeah. Like, even if you did not finish it and you want to finish it, you still need to get the credits and points for it.
Yeah. Thank you. It sounds like you're going to have a very successful school year based on what you learned at summer school.
And she's well on her way to being the first student in her family to go to college.
So good for you. Good
Mr. Caldy does this really. Okay.
Thank you for taking the time to come this evening and talk to us about your good summer school experience.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful. We love to hear this. And Mrs. Sainsbury, thank you so much. Okay, is there anyone from the public who would like to talk about summer school? Mrs. Rogers and Mr. Millar? Is that all right?
Sure. Yeah. I always defer.
You want to go age or beauty?
Oh. I'm not going there at all. You two work it out among yourselves.
Yeah. Okay,
go
well,
ahead,
thank you. I'll go. Well, a couple questions. Bridges was presented both as a middle school summer school offering and also was presented with the high school data. So I'm wondering, is Bridges something that we're just reaching our 8th grade students with?
It's any incoming student, so the students that are incoming. So at Los Osos Middle School, it would be 5th graders that are coming in as 6th graders. Mm-hmm. At Laguna, coming in as 7th. At the high school, coming in as 9th. So it's that bridge that we're trying to help them make the bridge from the school that either elementary or from middle to high school in order to kind of carefully identify and target some students that we think, you know what, with one extra push, we think they could really be successful. And let's kind of, you know, get them hooked into athletics or clubs or show them, here's how you, I know
summer?
We started it last year, unless there's something.
This is year two, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I really love it conceptually, and I think it really points kids towards success. Gives them a leg up. So that's great. And then my other question, and this is just, you know, I'm sure I already know the answer to this, but every child who wished to attend summer school in our district this year was able to have a place, correct?
At the secondary sites, or are you looking at the
Well, order? Across the board.
I believe so.
Let me start with elementary. Elementary is an invite summer school program. It's for students who need an intervention in order to increase towards proficiency. So it's not an invite out
to everybody.
Not
open enrollment.
That's correct. We start by prioritizing an invitation to all of our English learners and then go from there and add kids who could use that intervention.
Until we reach capacity?
Anybody who met those qualifications and who applied,
I think that may have solved it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just want to say that I think it was a couple of years ago, it was pretty gloomy about summer school. And I think what you all did last year and what you've done this year are is amazing. I feel so much better about us supporting learners per our initiatives during this summer period, and I want to commend you all for the work. But I do have one request. Could somebody tell me what metacognition means? Anyone? Amy? Oh, no wonder.
I'm going to give you the elementary definition of metacognition, and please, anybody feel free to jump in after me. When I metacognate, I'm thinking about my thinking. I'm wondering in my brain, feel free to jump in, boss, about a process, and I'm thinking it through, and I might even be saying it out loud as I'm thinking it through. Like right now I'm wondering if I'm saying this clearly enough that it's comprehensible and it makes sense. That's me metacognating right in front of you.
Wow, all right. Well, I want to thank Dr. Isendrath Rogers for explaining why I didn't know what it was.
So
yeah, big ideas. Okay, I'm thinking about it. Thank you, Amy. That was an excellent explanation. And I just wanted, so some of our total units or credits earned, would those include some students taking more than one class or gaining credit again on more than one class? Again, just spectacular. I hope we keep figuring out even better ways to support the kids every summer.
Mr. Buckman.
I also, are we still using the summer
program we came up with that year. We didn't do summer school to provide food for the students that...
We are.
And so there was a sign at C.L. Smith that said free lunches and...
Okay.
Then I...
Sign it.
That's really exciting. So if you'd like to comment, that would be...
Well, I agree with you. It's a real wonderful service out to our community to have that available, and it really makes our school sites become a place where people can come and have lunch and fellowship, so it's great.
Thank you.
This is Roger, then Mr. Quesenberry.
Well, this was just sort of piggybacking on what Mr. Millar's question was about metacognition. I was thinking that when, you know, we are all guilty of speaking out loud, talking to ourselves out loud, could that be considered metacognitive?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, I would add one more little thing to that. We do that a lot in classrooms. It's a great technique that teachers use with students, because as a teacher talks through their thinking with children, it helps children understand what they're saying in a different way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. Thank you.
Mr. Quesenberry.
I'm not meta anything. I want to commend you for the summer school turnaround. I think that's really fantastic. And the bridge program, I have a question and then also a comment. Let's start with a comment. The comment is, for years at least at the high school level, we looked at the kids that weren't successful in middle school, and you could almost, to the student, say they aren't going to succeed in high school. And we wondered if there could be something, some program that over the summer that can help them kind of turn that around. So I see the bridges as a possibility for that. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, that's exactly our thinking. We have a lot of flags by the time that students come to secondary school that we know that they may not be engaged in school in order to be successful. So since we know that, let's see how many of those kids we can grab, and let's see what we can do to, not just on the academic side, but we all know that when it comes to secondary school, it's some of the other things, right? Athletics, FFA, mm-hmm. choir, band, right? A lot of those things hook kids in, and as we all know, coaches, and, you know, they add a lot to have a student engaged and excited and wanting to come to school to be successful. So as Ms. Sainsbury was explaining, there's also executive functioning mm-hmm. skills, right, that students a lot of times we make the wrong assumptions that they know what it takes to kind of properly play the game of school to be able to be successful. And as soon as you give kids some of those skills, it's just knowledge that now they can go forward and, you know, be even more successful. So it's kind of a combination of skills with, let's get them hooked in, excited, super engaged, that they want to be here, and let's find their passion and see if we can find a way to hook them in.
Are we going to follow them at least through the end of their freshman year in terms of seeing how they compare with a student of a, you know, who doesn't go to bridge program but shares similar characteristics? Is there an intention to do that?
We did want to look at the success of it. The trick is when... you make a good point, trying to find similar students, because when you compare it to the success of the general student, you're going to struggle there a little. But, finding, you know, have we decreased any D's and F's? Are they a part of a club or a part of, mm-hmm, you know, something
absolutely.
Else is definitely a way to measure that.
So I look forward to seeing a collaboration like that continue. I think it's very useful for our students. It opens up additional possibilities for them throughout the school year, and it's what we ought to be doing. We're trying to teach partnership and collaboration, and let's show them we know how to do it.
And the board should be aware that is one of the ways we fund summer school. We save considerable dollars because Cuesta has the ability to collect ADA. We don't have the ability to collect ADA. And so there are certain courses where it actually makes sense for us to have Cuesta fund them. We have our own teachers often teach those classes. But Quest is getting some ADA for it that we don't get. So it's an interesting arrangement for us beyond just opening avenues.
Right.
So we can't do it with everything, but we're able to do it with quite a few of our courses.
It's wonderful. Thank you. Mr. Unger.
I was just thinking about Cuesta. And those credits are the credits and the grade point averages are transferable one-to-one as our grades and our credits?
They're actually receiving high school credit. So if it's a geometry class, for example, it will show just as a Morro Bay High School geometry course. So it actually will show in the same fashion. It's not, just to clarify, it's not a Cuesta, you know, Cal Poly accredited course, right? It's one of our courses. I hope that clarifies.
Right, that's exactly. It's different from what we brought to the board last year with some of our partnership with Cuesta, where they will receive high school credit and college credit. This is a way of getting high school credits via Cuesta.
Thank you. Mrs. Roger?
I'm a little bit confused. If you have these courses are being taught by our teachers and it's high school curriculum content, then how is Cuesta getting ADA? It confuses me.
We'll take it.
They're able to label it as a Cuesta course for summer school and collect ADA for it.
Okay, but everything happens on our campus with our personnel and our students.
Correct.
And our courses.
Correct.
Okay. Good for them.
Yeah, we may not want to, don't dig too deep. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
May I throw out a suggestion for those wonderful young people who are here? I think about them going through this program and having this intimate cohort group that they've formed now, and then they're going to get to the high school, and they're going to be a little bit at sea and maybe see each other occasionally, but it'd be wonderful if they had an opportunity to reconnect with each other and sustain each other through that, especially that first trimester in high school. So I just throw that out there. Maybe Bridges lunch every other week or, you know, some way for them to connect, because what great kids. Thanks for bringing them in for us to meet.
Absolutely.
Anyone else? All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, next we have item 8.02, adopt board priorities for the 2015-2016 school year.
Good evening, board. It's welcome back. You've had 6 weeks off. The cobwebs are working their way out. But I would like to, before we leave the summer school conversation, I would like to both introduce and acknowledge one of our mainstay summer school teachers at San Luis Obispo High School for English, and that's also our SLCTA president, Craig Stewart. Mr. Craig Stewart. Yeah, I didn't want to miss that opportunity. So, on the topic of board priorities, I am seeking a formal adoption of these board priority bold strategic initiatives for student success and an outgrowth of those initiatives 4 years later. The evolution of those initiatives, if you will, are these priorities. And I know that they've become a bit more refined. These don't include everything in those initiatives, but it allows our organization to stay focused in a very complex environment. And so I believe it's super important that we validate your efforts as a board to keep the whole organization focused on what really are the most important elements, I believe, for student success. I did take the liberty in an effort to metacognate, took the liberty to translate stances. Much easier said than done. But if our intention is that belief that all kids, all students, have a chance and a right to have the ability to succeed, and we forward, then we need to declare it. And so we've declared it. And we have a value, clearly, within each of these priorities under Embrace, we have a value, we've placed a value on student achievement for all. Exemplary teaching practices. The emotional well-being for all students is a critical feature to this. And a culture of high expectation. You know, I am one, and I know you share this belief, that if you don't hold high expectations, then typically we all meet different degrees of success. Whereas if you hold the bar high, it sends a message that you care. And that's really what you're doing here. An example of that is highlighted here. one of the priorities that you have set forward here under Embrace is to utilize the teacher evaluation system to effectively meet the needs of all learners. Well, really what this is a districts. This should be and is, in my mind, the envy of most school districts across the state and perhaps the nation, because the Charlotte Danielson teacher instructional model that we have adopted mutually and collaboratively with our union is about a progressive development. It is really about developing our practices together, improving in very specific ways on how we meet the needs of kids, how we become successful. There's rubrics, it's rich, it's difficult. Surely the expectation is high. It's going to take us years to reach our capacity and our potential, but it's a great start. So you have identified that as a priority. We have embraced that in many different ways, and it's a work in progress. The next area is innovate. My declarative statement: we believe innovation in the classroom is the catalyst for student engagement. In these priorities, we've placed clear value on learning environments that challenge and engage all students. We've placed a value on tools and digital curriculum that boost learning. And you saw evidence of that in the summer school presentation moments ago. We've placed a value on the exploration of creativity and new ideas, and the cultivation of teamwork, interdependence, and collaboration, because that's where the world's going. That's what our kids need to develop, is knowing how to work within teams, knowing how their role is within a team. And it's a critical, critical skill set that we all need to harness for our kids to be successful, regardless of where they're coming from when they join us. We have a responsibility to get them ready for the world. The example I would like to highlight here under Innovate is foster and encourage defined site-level autonomy, principal leadership, instructional coaching, creative use of site-level professional development, single school plans for student achievement. Now, what does it mean, encourage defined site-level autonomy? Really, what this means is that we recognize as a district that the greatest things that happen, I believe, in schools comes from the classroom floor, comes from a collaborative buy-in moment between staff and the principal. But the beauty of this is that it's defined. So it's not just anything you want to do, but it's around certain principles, certain guidelines, certain guideposts have been established. And that's what these priorities identify. But the site-level autonomy really places a less central local school site, our teachers and our principals at the site level, to really come together and figure out what's best for their school in relation to what it is we're having to do, which is meet the needs of all kids. And so we're looking to enhance that creativity. We're looking at empowering our teachers and our principals to come up with creative ways that they all can buy into to say, this is what we need to meet the needs of all our kids. Now, when the SBAC data comes out, you're going to see how challenging that's going to be, because you're going to see the ranges of learners in our schools. And instead of that being a centralized dictate, like the federal government had done under No Child Left Behind, where they would punish schools if they didn't meet certain marks, instead, I think what's going to happen with this particular focus area is that sites are going to look at their own data, and they're going to come to terms with it. And they're going to have to ask that question: how are we going to meet the needs of all our kids? How are we going to move everyone forward this year in our school? And I think that's a very important nuance, and it's captured here in this this section of your priorities. I'd like to go to the final one, which is govern. The declarative statement that I came up with here with a little help from a friend. We believe anything is possible with visionary leadership, great teaching, and conservation of resources. The value here is clearly on the alignment of resources that best support student achievement and 21st century citizenship. A value to balance the budget and protect the future, a value on the conservation of financial resources wherever possible, and a value on keeping our commitment to the community by effectively managing our Measure D promises and funds. Benefit costs, that includes the PERS and STRS contributions happening to us over the next several years. It's going to impact not just employees, but the district. So our employees are going to see less in their paycheck when we can't continue to provide the things that we know makes a difference in the lives of students and staff. So with that, I am looking for your approval and adoption of the board priorities so that we can move this forward towards to our staff and create measurable benchmarks so that we'll know if we're successful.
Thank you. So to reiterate just very briefly, these are the three kind of overarching priorities that we gave a consensus thumbs up to at the board retreat, and now we're formalizing it, as well as the building blocks to achieve those, if I'm
That's correct. Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to discuss the board priorities? All right, we'll bring it back to the...
I love that. So, and now instead of success for all, we get to embrace every child in the district, which is a, you know, physical action that we're undertaking. I love that. And innovating, we're just in every area that we've outlined before. That's always been our initiative. We can now think harder and deeper and more in the present about and try to move that along further. And then governing, hopefully that's what we're doing every day. But I just wanted to commend you on that, because I really got it when I read the way you had interpreted the goals we had set. So thank you. All right. Oh, and I'd like to make a motion based on that comment. I move that we approve the overarching initiatives for the board priorities for this school year.
And I'll second it.
All right. Mr. Unger, you had further discussion?
I fully support these as well. I think one of the things that this allows us to do is, as we reflect back on the year next June, that you were tasked to do as well.
Yeah, these become my evaluation.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, pressure's on.
Yeah. I was thinking about the site autonomy, which I know we've talked a lot about, and I really think it's a positive step. I'm wondering if you envision sort of a site level LCAP, not to take the place of our district level LCAP, which of course we know is required by the state and which is guiding us toward our, you know, our fiscal resources and the way that we're doing business. But is that sort of what you're thinking about? Is school principals leading the discussion among teachers and their community and their students about what those specific needs are on those campuses?
Mr. Unger, that's a great insight. You know, the truth is we've been struggling mightily with the single plans for student achievement over the last several years, because we've been in that flux place where there really hasn't been good data. So it literally had been watered down to things that were that made it a binder or a piece or a report that ended up on a desk or on a shelf. And so this last summer we contracted with Pivot Group,
right, okay,
for our secondary schools, and in effect their former very successful site administrators that had harnessed the power of a single plan for student achievement. And they've been working this summer, thanks to Mrs. McGrath. She's been working with them. And I have had the opportunity to actually talk with the coaches and talk with the administrators. And they're really excited about the guidance. They seem to really have benefited from the clarity that it brought and the things that they'll in turn be able to communicate with their staffs. Now, We haven't done that with our elementaries yet, but because I want to see how it unfolds. Sure. But I see what you mentioned about is, do I see defined site autonomy almost as the opportunity to build like a very local site LCAP, if you will. That's what I envision the SPSAs becoming.
Right, and I guess that will look a little bit different from the SPSAs that we've seen in the past, which look more more standard. And I think what we're hearing is that it's going to be a multi-part API, including things like school culture, school climate, bullying, attendance, high school graduation. Right,
and a whole lot at stake.
Yeah, and I foresee the principals really taking this challenge on, but I think the principals are going to need a lot of support from the district, as I know you know that as well, because we want everyone to be successful.
Our success will be in the empowerment of others.
Great.
Empowerment and support, and define a clear definition as to what the parameters are.
Great.
And let them run.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and we have a second for approval of the priorities for the 2015-16 school year. Any further discussion? We'll have a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? None? Very good. Thank you. Get to work. All right. 45-day budget revision, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so part of the state education code is that we're supposed to, as a basic aid school district, as you know, a lot of the changes that happened, a lot of money that went into schools with this budget, with the growing economy, did not come to San Luis Coastal because we are a basic aid school district. And so I'll talk a little bit about those. The other part that's kind of an interesting dynamic as we go through these is, you know, part of the LCFF, part of the local control funding formula, was supposed to give boards a lot more discretion, focus, how they're moving. And so what you'll see with a lot of these things that kind of come up that the governor's funded, the legislature's funded, they kind of seem like categoricals a little bit again. And so it's just kind of an interesting dynamic where they just can't let loose of certain items. And so it's just one of those things that whenever I go to school services or places, as much as they want to free up the funds for school boards to make those decisions, it's just so tough for them to loosen those strings enough and not have them. So, I do think, as Dr. Prater mentioned in the board goals, the seven-year budget is a huge thing for us to focus on as a board. You know, I don't think the board could have made the decision last year to go forward with the compensation, the raise that we gave to all of our employees, if you didn't see that picture, kind of a far distance out, it's a critical thing, and it's something that, again, we'll update with unaudited actuals. You know, we're going to have a big deficit last year, and that's not a surprise. We know that. We knew that going in. Now, that said, this year, these one-time funds that we're going to receive is going to bring us back up to a balanced budget level, will help our reserve levels kind of get back to where they were based on the spending of the Common Core money, as well as that the raise that we gave our employees. But ongoing, we're tied to our property tax increases. So right now the state of California is doing well. You're going to see some one-time dollars that even as a basic aid school district we were able to get. The biggest one is just basically paying us our mandated cost funds back, which we should have received anyways. But as the economy potentially dips in the future, those one-time funds are going to go away. And so we will be solely reliant on those property tax dollars. So, again, as you know, I'm not one to fire and brimstone and, you know, oh, woe is us type of thing. So there's a lot that we need to do in our district. We're doing a lot of great things. We need to continue to fund those things. Yet we need to make sure that we're financially stable as well. So it's that balance. It's maintaining that balance that we need to do. So it's, in terms of the 45-day revise, some good news in terms of our one-time discretionary funds. With the surplus, with the state of California, we had, I believe in the budget, we had kind of shown the initial forecast of funds that were going to come to the district. So that rose to $528 per student. So represents about a $2.4 million increase. in terms of the one-time funds, discretionary for mandated cost funds for the districts. That's good. Again, this is kind of that categorical flavor. So they did put in some money for educator effectiveness funding. So specific, go ahead. Sorry.
I wanted to ask about, it indicates under one-time discretionary funds about the offset of outstanding mandated costs, but that won't compensate us for all of our outstanding mandated costs, as I understand it. So is there still an opportunity for those additional costs to be collected at some point?
In the future.
Okay. Thank you.
So basically what the governor's been doing is, again, as we talked about, I think we've talked about it at other meetings, all these one-time monies, as much as he can, he's kind of making those go towards the mandated, basically, balances that district owes. But even districts who don't have mandated fund balances, they're still getting the money anyways. So it's just an interesting dynamic. But that said, hey, it's funds, it's one time, they're paying their mandated costs. Great. It's terrific right now. So that's a positive for us.
So,
yeah.
So just for clarity, so this is money that's owed us for mandated costs, but really, I understand it's one-time money, but it's also money at a much lesser amount that's supposedly going to come to the district annually. Is that
so? We're still owed a substantial amount of money. I believe after this, I want to say it's in the $4 to $5 million range still.
Yeah.
So,
but
whether the state pays us back or not will really be determined on if the state economy is doing well, if they have a lot of extra surplus. What the governor's trying to do is not have these ongoing things that go into Prop 98 that he has to pay school districts each year. So by doing the one time, the mandated cost, those are things that are easily cut should the economy take a little bit of a dip.
But your expectation is annually we should be getting annual mandated cost repayments for the.
So what I would say
so
is.
Do you think those are going to. They're not
so. So all the only thing that we for sure receive from the state is the mandated block grant. So we receive funds now through mandated block grant. Basically, the way that they're doing this payback now is forcing everyone to do the mandated block grant.
Right.
It doesn't pay to do your own mandates anymore.
Right.
So that is the only money that I would ever put on a 7-year budget guarantee. So the other $5 million that we're still owed.
Yeah, who knows?
Shot in the dark.
But the
whether or not we would get that each year.
But your expectation is now maybe that the budget's sort of getting better is rather than this building up and not giving us, that annually we'll start getting that block that we're due every year.
We receive the block grant. So that's
we'll
for sure.
That,
that's in
we'll
our 7-year budget.
Okay.
Yeah, we're receiving that no matter what. It's that other $5 million past money that we're due. It really is dependent on whether we have the economy's doing well. So the next one is kind of nice in that it's one-time fund. So, sorry, Mark.
That's okay. So in past years, we followed the mandates and submitted the costs.
Yes.
And expected to be reimbursed.
For years.
And we're not. And now they're sort of chipping away at it a little bit.
Yes.
What was owed previously. But currently and going forward, we're not accumulating costs and submitting them. We're just submitting the block grant, which is in a the same amount as Lucia Marr or Tascadero or whoever. Or what is that based on?
It's a certain amount per student based on ADA.
Based on ADA.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So our upwards claims were $800,000 a year. I believe the mandated block grant is about $250,000. So it's a substantially less amount ongoing, but it's again we were receiving nothing for years and years, so even that, you know, especially during tough times was definitely something we wanted to do. So the next one was kind of interesting because it's one-time money that the state again is giving to districts, even basic aid school districts, so it's a positive thing for us, and he didn't tie it to mandated block grant. So it's kind of, you know, so that kind of went against what a lot is that has been happening with that. I think the reason why he didn't do that, you know, computers and those types of things, but they can't make you do that. So that one-time discretionary money at the first bullet is basically up to the school board to determine. The next one is focused on educator effectiveness. So it's a certain amount of funds that's based on per student. Again, this is one of those things that's been budgeted. It's a certain amount per teacher as of right now, But there's the what is a teacher? What does a certificated staff member mean? So we're still waiting on kind of the trailer bill and information about what really that is and how many students we have or teachers we have or what they consider teachers. Is it counselors? Is it other certificated staff? Is it school psychologists? Is it, you know, all of those types of things? So we'll see. But even at that, 400 teachers, it's about $400,000. So again, that's going to help that deficit that we hit last year. And kind of bringing us back into those things. Adult education was funded for a year. So because the board has kept adult education going, basically our maintenance of effort funds, the $272,000 the district will receive, how we can spend that money, what we can spend it on, we're still waiting. You know, Sally reads up on everything and tries to find it, and it's still kind of an unknown about, because there's the new state eight programs that adult education, and so can we spend it on administrative costs or other things like that. So we're still kind of waiting to see consortium, adult education consortium, where we have to be tied in with Cuesta. So again, that's kind of hard to figure out still, and how those relationships are going to go and how the money's going to be dispersed. And so it's kind of an ongoing. So again, the legislature, good intention, want to have an adult education program. Prop 39, want to, you know, have energy jobs. But a lot of times the details that go into those programs are not clear from the beginning. So we kind of have to wait for them to come out, figure them out, and then we move forward. So we're definitely, Rick, Sally, have been meeting with Cuesta, meeting with groups, and moving forward with adult education. The next one is our lottery funds. We receive about $1.4 million in lottery funds each year based on ADA. Unfortunately, they took away our adult education ADA from the financial, how they come up with our lottery funds. And so it's a little bit of a reduction from what we've seen in the past. And so we used to, because our adult education program was so strong and ADA was so big, it really benefited the district in terms of some of these items like lottery funds. And then the second page is just kind of a couple quick things that really don't have any immediate impact on San Luis Coastal, in that the gap for our LCFF, so if something were to happen and property taxes dropped and we were going to receive state funds, San Luis Coastal does have an LCFF. There is an amount of money that we would receive as a district. Huge gap gains. So the gap, basically, we're supposed to be funded at a certain level. Every district, kind of what their base level was over the past couple of years, has risen a little bit. So that gap, what the state should pay and what a school district is getting, is called the gap. So school districts across the state of California receive 50% of that gap this year. So huge influx of funds for a lot of districts. In terms of those that do receive state money and do receive that. So you're going to see that districts around, like we talked about. For San Luis Coastal, none of those dollars affect us. It's not helping us. As property tax revenues rise, that is a positive. We'll know more in September, October, kind of where that's going to rise. And if you've looked at the market, if you've seen, it seems like property taxes or property values are increasing rapidly. It is kind of an anomaly in San Luis Coastal. I will say, though, that even though properties are more expensive, there's not a lot that's selling, and a lot of people, we have kind of a pent-up property tax, in that a lot of people own their homes or pay property taxes at a much less amount than what the home would be actually worth today should they sell it. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic with us. And we found that when we were selling our bonds and looking at those things.
Can I ask you a question about that? I think at one point you had said, I don't remember if it was 2021, 2022, something like that, that you expected our LCF, where we would be at LCFF, would meet where we are with our property taxes. Do you still see, because of those increases, do you still see that happening?
Not really. I think with the more than 2% property tax we've received over the last couple of years, I think it's going to continue to outpace the LCFF. I honestly think that the California economy is not going to sustain like it has been over the next 5 years. And so because of that, you're going to see districts that their gap funding may be nothing in a year, could be negative at some point. You could, you know, they could go back to the old method of deferring payments and those types of things should the economy falter. So it's, I don't think so, unless something dramatically happened with property taxes for us. So it's closer than it was in the past, I will say that. So in terms of the dramatic decrease that the district was going to face, should something happen, you know, in terms of our overall property taxes, I think it is closer. The gap is closer, so that's a safer place for the district should something happen, but it's still not, I don't think they're going to meet. And it, when I go to school services and I listen to kind of people talk and CBOs and kind of people that are, you know, advisors and officials and kind of the business, they would agree. They really don't see the LCFF making the substantial gains over the course of years. But we'll see. I mean, this year was unbelievable, 50% gap funding. Career technical education, again, another program. Sounds great. Wouldn't it be great to get CTE into classrooms and for districts to be able to use those funds and for the board to decide the best way to do that? Well, it's not that easy. So it's grants, there's requirements, there's paperwork. Kim has to work with Cuesta, with other districts. So though the grant funds are there, and we will be going after them and trying to get them and bring them in however we can, it's not local control funding formula. It's not local control deciding how money's spent. And then the last one, routine restricted maintenance account, 3% contribution is the required. They actually didn't. They were going to make districts do it. They decided not to, that they're going to phase it in. We put 3% towards routine restricted maintenance. In fact, we probably put more than that over the past couple of years as we've put in new playgrounds and buildings and infrastructure and Wi-Fi and everything else that the board has kind of moved forward on. So those are kind of the key items. I'll be coming back to the board again mid-September with unaudited actuals, clear picture, looking at the future, hopefully. Hopefully we'll have a better idea in terms of where property taxes are going to land this year. But we'll be putting these items into the kind of the revised 7-year budget and moving forward.
Thank you.
Ms. Roger?
Well, first I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak to this issue? All right, Ms. Roger.
Thank you. This question probably actually belonged in the business update portion, and maybe you can answer it or Mr. Unger can answer it, but I'm wondering if there's been any movement on the reserve cap.
There's actually an article out today that talked about it. There's a new bill that's been proposed that's looking at a 17% cap for basic aid school districts and for school districts. So there's definitely there. It's out there. They're still discussing it. They're still talking about it. What the governor decides to do, how it goes forward, I think something will eventually happen. Okay. You know, right now, that cap won't come into place unless some dramatic things happen. People don't really see those things necessarily happening, these dramatic increases in gap funding. And so if those key things don't happen, the reserve doesn't happen. So it's one of those, I think, until we're actually faced with having to have that reserve, that it's going to really come to light and make people really think about it. But I know CSBA, I know other groups are definitely fighting for it.
Pushing.
And it's yeah. It's still a hot button with a lot of circles.
Okay, thank you. And Chris, I'd be happy to hear anything you would have to add on that.
As Ryan mentioned, I believe there was a bill today that was introduced from a Democrat in the San Francisco Bay Area. When I read the article this morning, it said the details would be forthcoming, so I'm assuming we'll see about that tomorrow. CSBA continues to fight it. We've dedicated quite a bit of money to the proposition that it's not a good thing. We expect that we will be airing radio ads in targeting legislators who need to make a decision that we think is in the best interest of kids. So we're working hard at it. We haven't forgotten about it, and we're continuing to push forward on it. It's probably the biggest political issue that CSBA has been working on. So Not gone, not forgotten.
Yeah. Personnel cost definitely the key, as Dr. Prater said. We'll talk about that more on audited actuals when we look at the budget. But even employees coming back in September, every one of our employees had their, you know, certificated staff had their STIRS employee contribution raised 1% this year. That's going to hit their check in September. And we've talked about it, put a blog, all those types of things. But unfortunately, for a lot of employees, until they get that check and go, what happened? I thought we had a raise. What? So that we'll be talking to people, explaining it goes up again another 1%, 1.2% the following year for employees. The district portion continues to rise 2% a year over the next 5 years. So it's a scary thing for us in terms of looking at that. So working with our labor groups, making sure that everyone's aware, I think seeing that 7-year budget, it's reality. You know, we're not hiding anything. We're not, it's all out there for us. And I think for the, you know, it definitely hopefully helps the board make good decisions about the future. And I think maintaining good reserves is key. But there's also programs and things that we need to get accomplished that we need to, you know, maintain that balance over the next few years. So,
thank you, Mr. Unger.
Could you remind us, I think, just so everybody knows, what the ultimate STIRS district contribution will be within, I think it's the next 5 years? And when you looked at your 7-year budget projection, the increase from, say, today to, what was it? What's that, you know, 7 years, 2022?
So we can actually, Kim can pull it up on the website, 7-year budget. But so this year, for example, we're actually projecting that our certificated employee costs are going to go down because of retirements a little bit, so we're maintaining about the same. But just the STIRS contribution is going to go up about $1.3 million this year. So that's a lot.
It is.
It's a lot of money.
It is.
So we're going to need a lot of property tax revenue to do that. So, again, it's hard for me because I don't want to be the negative, you know. But yeah, so we have to just keep that in perspective. We've got to watch our personnel costs. You just see all the things that we're doing at our school sites. It's unbelievable. We need to keep doing those. So it's being efficient, figuring out what we can do to maintain things. But you can see it goes from, again, last year, $3.1 million to $7 million. Every time you give a raise, it increases that number. So it's unbelievable. And again, that's not even showing the employee side, because they're also increasing health benefits as well as STIRS and PERS over the next 2 years. So it's tough. It's a tough situation.
All right, thank you very much. Anyone else? All right, don't go anywhere. Yes, item 8.04, authorized Director of Facilities and Operations as representative and approved signatory for the SMARTS Stormwater Plan.
Yes, so there's a
this
new...
This sounds very exciting.
It does.
Yeah,
so
we're
there's
on
a new
tenterhook.
Online program for stormwater management. I had to sign up by penalty of perjury that I was the one submitting the plan, doing all those things, and I have absolutely no idea what stormwater plans and things are. Now, that said, fortunately, I fired a person by the name of Anthony Palazzo, who knows about the plan, learns, does those. But unless I want to perjure myself and have him turn in those documents for me and sign for them and go on the website and fill out the forms and do all those things, I think it would be much better if Anthony were the person to oversee our SMARTS system and our stormwater management plan.
Does he know this? That
he
this
does.
Is being
he does.
Proposed
he does.
Here this evening?
Has he filled out the form to sign me up? And we were yes, he does.
Until he saw the news,
right.
The rebroadcast.
Yes. Anyone from the public wishing to address this exciting SMARTS stormwater plan? All right, Mr. Millar.
Well, I have to say, when I first read this, I thought, this is like the Maytag repairman commercials, you know. It must be just busy, busy, busy with stormwater discharge stuff.
You would
so,
be amazed.
Could be this next year.
You would be amazed.
Oh,
yes,
yeah,
we
could
have
be.
El Nino.
I'm hoping. So the SMARTS thing, I'm not even going to ask you what the acronym means, but that's the software to provide the online portal, to do all these...
To do the plans,
NOTs, NOIs, NECs. Yeah. I think Anthony for sure.
Yes.
I'll move approval of Anthony Palazzo being in charge of this.
Okay, we have Mr. Buck? No? All right. We'll take a second. All right. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
All right. We carry. So I just looked up SMARTS to Mr. Millar. It looks like it stands for something like Stormwater Multiple Applications Reporting and something else. Tracking systems. Stormwater Multiple Application and Report Tracking System, which really is not much more information than SMARTS as far as I'm concerned, but I'm not going to read the entire website right now. Okay. Getting back to our agenda. All right, so now we're on to our action consent agenda. Please let me know if anyone wants any of these items pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Hold. 9.02, disposition of surplus property. 9.03, acceptance of donations. 9.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.05, approval of purchase orders. 9.06, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. 9.07, authorized pass-through checking account for Morro Bay High School. Okay, 9.0, I would look for a motion with regard to 9.02, 03, 04, 05, and 06.
I'll make that motion.
And
thank
I'll
you,
second.
Mr. Buckman. Thank you, Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right. That motion carries. 9.01. Either Chris or Catherine.
Yes. I'll need to abstain on item 9.01 since my wife is specifically named in that item.
Thank you. Catherine?
Elise, since I have the opportunity to do that, she will be greatly missed in the work that she's done at Del Mar. So I want to acknowledge her years of service to the district. And also Lori Valens, Lori Valens, the secretary. I don't know what Janet's going to do without her, but we will miss her greatly. And I just want to mention Nancy Kunde, who kind of snuck up there on us, and she retired, and she'll be greatly missed in our own personnel department. Thank you for your service.
Good for you, Kat.
All right, then I would like a motion on 9.01, please.
I'll move 9.01.
Thank you.
Second it.
Mr. Quisenberry, thank you. All any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And we have an abstention. Mr. Unger abstains. All right. Mr. Millar, 9.07.
Just briefly, I wanted to mention how pleased I am to see some direct action taken.
7 seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. No abstentions. All right. Any advance agenda items at this time? Anyone wishing to make a board report at this time? Mr. Buckman, Mr. Quisenberry, Mr. Unger. Okay. Mark?
I actually had the opportunity to sit, and I don't know if it was the administrative get-together or some staff development, but it was really nice to attend, and it was a lot of the school site principals and assistant principals were there. And I'm just going to take this opportunity for a little political ad. I think people need to understand and remember that the state of California administrators and principals and assistant principals have more students to deal with than any other state in the United States. So the ratio of students to administrators is huge, and it's always good to remember that, the good work that they're doing.
Thank you. Mr. Quesenberry.
Yes, I had the opportunity to visit Morro Bay High School yesterday, on behalf of a Rotary Exchange student, but I'm glad to report that I see staff rushing about, getting things ready. I think things are going to go quite well on Monday the 24th.
Thank you. And Chris?
I think we do some things here that we should be proud of, and just some of the protocols that we use, for example, making sure we always go for public comment, for example, making sure that we're the ones that are doing policy, not administrative regulations. For example, the way that we handle advanced agenda items. Those are all things that I think we should really be proud of. I think we should be proud of the job that we do, and I think that we should be excited about the fact that we have not only some serious times together when we make some serious decisions, but I think we also have some fun together. And I think the relationship that we are able to have as a school board and the longevity that we as school board members have really has helped stabilize this district. And again, if we look back at the good old days back in the 1990s, I think we've really come a long way. And I think we should all pat ourselves on the back.
Thank you. And that is Annie Sharp in transportation. We received an email last night regarding the need for an additional bus stop, and in fewer than 12 hours later, that email came in at, I don't remember, 8 or so last night, and by 8 o'clock or earlier this morning, she had solved the problem, set up an additional bus stop to meet the needs of these families in this area. It was all done smoothly and professionally and problem solved. And I just have such respect for the folks we have here who are able to learn of a problem and deal with it immediately. It's not always to the great satisfaction of whoever may have the problem or is posing the question, but the fact that we get back to people so rapidly to assist however we can, I really appreciate. I think that speaks highly.
It was absolutely phenomenal. It just looks like we've got a great group of dedicated new staff coming on, and the hamburgers are okay that Rick and Ryan tried to make, but the staff looked really good that Kristen hired.
Thank you. All right. With that, we will adjourn to meet in a few short days, Friday morning, for Measure D study session. Thank you all very much. Tomorrow morning, kickoff Morro Bay High School.
Okay. Yeah.
Every day, let's show up.